experience working in climate justice and environmentalism. So could you explain for people like me, what does field surveying entail exactly?
For field surveying, we train volunteers in a variety of different skills and in the field. And so that includes map and compass skills. It includes identifying old growth conditions. It includes identifying areas that have been heavily impacted by past logging, as well as things like the degree of slope, road density, things like that. And so this information is important because we use it both to prioritize areas that, and we also train people in wildlife and plant identification, particularly for key species that are important to our work and that help to identify certain forest types. And so we take all of this information and we train people how to fill out survey sheets that we create specifically. And so that goes into helping inform areas that we prioritize for protection and negotiations with the Forest Service to ask them to, for example, drop or modify specific areas that they are planning to log. And so it helps us protect forests in the areas that we have field surveyed.
So you were getting into this a little bit before and talking about why biodiversity, why this is so essential. I'm wondering, is there a single biggest takeaway or issue that the common person who's not doing this kind of work out in the wildlife like yourself needs to understand to really grasp what's going on, right? Because when we talk about the environment, I think for me, I can get really lost in the weeds sometimes because it's such a big topic in so many different details of environmental climate justice work that's being done. So yeah, I'm wondering if there is something that you have noticed in your work that is the most pressing thing that you're noticing or biggest takeaway for folks.
I can break down just sort of quickly a few more bullet points that I think are important to think about for forests, particularly in terms of, in a sense, the huge collateral damage being done to forests by wide-scale logging, mostly in the name of fear of fire across the region. And so, just to kind of throw out a few of those ideas, logging is bad for biodiversity and for the climate, and logging is the largest source of carbon emissions in Oregon, and that was according to a 2018 OSU study, which confirmed previous research that had been done by the Center for Sustainable Economy. Logging in the east side often targets large trees and mature and old forests. And unfortunately, large trees remain at a deficit on the landscape due to over a century of ecologically inappropriate management and overlogging. And that is, particularly dire because large trees are crucially important for wildlife habitat and biodiversity, carbon storage, and stream habitats in the region. And, yet they are still being increasingly targeted by the Forest Service for logging. And just to highlight that, a study came out in 2021 that was led by Dr. David Muldrexler that shows that large trees comprise just 3% of the trees in forests east of the Cascade Crest in eastern Oregon and southeastern Washington, yet they store approximately 42% of the carbon in these forests. Large trees need to be preserved on the landscape, not logged. And then logging degrades or destroys important forest and stream habitats for wildlife and fish, and that includes species such as marten, lynx, wolverine, elk and deer, salmon, and many more. Many species depend on mature and old forests, including mixed conifer forests, and so those species are particularly at risk as the agency continues to target those forests for logging. And also, I would be remiss not to note that roads are a huge issue on national forests and can be very damaging, particularly when there's a high density of roads. And you can't have timber sales without roads. You have to have a very extensive road infrastructure for all of those timber sales that are currently being proposed and carried out. And so there are lots and lots and lots of roads on national forests in eastern Oregon. And, I really want readers to sit with some of this idea. Like, for example, both the Malheur and the Wallal-Whitman National Forest each contain over 9,000 miles of existing inventory roads, and that's the Forest Service's own data. And so it's just a huge volume of roads, and it creates fragmentation, it damages water quality. Those forests currently have road densities that are at levels that are recognized as threats to water quality, fish, and watershed health, and they exceed the Forest Service's own standards in at least many areas. And then also those road crossings across streams, culverts often fail and create barriers to fish passage, and they block many hundreds of miles of habitat for salmon and other imperiled fish. And so, you know, of course, we're concurrently spending millions of dollars trying to ensure that salmon and other imperiled fish don't go extinct, yet we're not taking care of some of their important habitat, even something as simple as dealing with, you know, blocked passages, blocked culverts and road crossings that are creating passages that are blocking passage to hundreds of miles of their habitat. Also, there's extensive cumulative impacts with issues such as widespread livestock grazing on the national forests in eastern Oregon. And livestock grazing can be hugely damaging to fish, streams, and water quality. And then I also want to leave folks with the idea, with the thought that, you know, researchers have found that less than 1% of thinned areas actually encounter wildfire each year. So, you know, that forests are vast and huge, and that they are being thinned in the name of fear of fire, you know, that supposed thinning treatment is only good for approximately somewhere between a 10 and 20 year window. And so the idea that a thinned area will have a wildfire pass through it, encounter it, in the window of time that is supposedly effective is very small. You know, a couple of other just takeaway messages I think are important are that we're at a critical juncture in the fight against climate change and loss of biodiversity. And we desperately need to protect biodiversity, clean water, and the climate. And instead, we're losing too much of the remaining last best habitat in our region to logging. And that is exacerbating the climate and biodiversity crises.
Thanks, Paula. That seems like a really complicated and massive undertaking that you all are doing there at Blue Mountains Biodiversity. Besides pursuing litigation or legal action, is there any other ways of holding folks accountable when that kind of discrepancy or misleading information is being put out there?
I think having public outcry about it is very, very important. And so, you know, I think one thing that people can do is visit our website and sign up for our action alerts and volunteer with our organization, because, you know, we're engaged with the Forest Service, and we also try to provide a platform for people to engage with the Forest Service, the general public, to understand better how to give feedback and engage with the Forest Service on these issues. And so hopefully with enough raised voices and public outcry, you know, one, the public understands these issues better, and then also the Forest Service hopefully starts to change some of their actions as they get more pressure from the public.
Could you tell me a little bit about the Autumn Celebration and Benefit event that you all are holding this upcoming weekend? What can participants expect there, and what the funds go towards financing?
Yeah, we hope people come. We're having an Autumn Celebration and annual benefit, and that is on October 28th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Green Anchors in Portland. And it'll be outdoors, under a large covered canopy in case of rain, and there will be a bit of live music. We're having Burnt Valley play and a costume contest, a silent auction, and food by donation, as well as a presentation about our work. And we've received wonderful donations for our auction. Those include, for example, a two-night stay at Left Coast Lodge in Sisters, Oregon, a cabin stay at Wellspring Spa and Woodland Retreat out near Rainier in Washington, handmade pies, and jewelry, much more. So, and then the attendance is $10 to just donation, but no one is turned away for lack of funds. And the address for Green Anchors is 8940 Bradford Street in Portland. And you can visit our website for details about the event. And our website is BlueMountainsBiodiversityProject.org. And so no spaces, no capitals, just Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project is one word, .org. And also forest theme costumes are encouraged, but costumes are totally optional. So yeah, please come out. We hope you join us.
Awesome. Sounds like a really fun time. May I ask, Paula, what are your plans to go dressed as this weekend?
You know, I haven't made my costume yet. I want to go as a caddisfly, but I haven't had time to finish making the costume, so I'm not sure if I'm gonna have it in time. We'll see.
Fun. Well, that sounds like exciting thing to do with others, and what a fun way to celebrate. Well, thank you again for chatting with me today, and looking forward to the event this weekend. Have fun and good luck having that go off smoothly.
Absolutely, and feel free to join us if you can, we'd love to see you and any KBOO folks out there if possible.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Paula. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to KBOO News in Depth. That was Paula Hood from the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project speaking about the work that they do and their upcoming Autumn Celebration benefit this Saturday, October 28th from 6 to 9 at Green Anchors in Portland. For more information, you can go to their website at BlueMountainsBiodiversityProject.org. For KBOO News, I'm Paul Kim.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're nearing the end of our fall membership drive. We only have a few days left to meet our $55,000 goal, and you can do your part by going to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution today. All donations will be matched up to $14,000 thanks to a generous group of donors. KBOO's independent programming is only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm.